Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to the Unsung Podcast, where we talk about classic albums and decide if they deserve that distinction. And we also talk about some unsung classics in the hopes of bringing them to a new audience. And at the end of it all, we let you decide if we are right or wrong. This is the Unsung Podcast.
I'm your host, Mark Fraser, otherwise known as The Curator, and I'm joined on my left and right by two lovely outlandish fellows.
On my left is Chris Cusack, who's once voted Scotland's 11th most eligible man. and he's also only the third Brit to... I don't know.
Follow through till you finish your sentence.
Yeah, only the third Brit to ever... traverse the Atlantic in a submersible by a steam-powered submersible.
Interesting fact, the 10 sexiest men that finished above me were all Simon from Biffy.
Was it like every single stage of tattoos and hair?
It was just Simon and his 10 different angles that he takes in photos.
Just like running really fast.
One at each one. Yeah, I didn't stand a chance, to be perfectly honest. Actually, number 12 was him as well, but he wasn't facing the right way.
At least I'm sexy in the back of Simon Neil.
And even then. But to my right is David Weaver, a man who often takes shirts back to shops because they're not pastel enough.
That's true.
Photo of pastel shirt coming on Instagram sometime in the near future.
It's very light.
But yet not light enough. So yeah, that's all I've got this week, Dave.
That's your whack, okay.
I feel I used some of my time making fun of Simon Neil, which I feel okay about.
Yeah, I can deal with that.
We have spoken, and we voted that The Remote Part was not a classic record, and the public agree with us. So that does not go into our discography of amazing records. And I think we all think that's a great idea. Cheers, guys. This episode, we are talking about...
Jane Doe by the band Converge.
Who chose this record? Did we chose this?
Again, I think this was actually pretty much a consensus record.
Yeah, I think this is the ones that we all had on our top 10.
Okay. Who wants to kick us off then as to why this record definitely deserves to go in a discography of amazing albums?
Mark, I think you should, because I know you have conflicted emotions about it as well.
I'll start off by saying what I think is the most obvious thing, the elephant in the room, is this: their album is phenomenal. This is a towering work of... musical genius, I guess. And I don't even
that's more like the elephant hosting the party. That's like the elephant that's going around making sure everyone's got drinks, has made the food, has tidied up. That's that elephant is not standing quietly in the corner.
Not anymore, because he's just told everybody what he's thinking.
That's why we're there, yeah.
And
there's another elephant in the room. In fact, there's probably about another 8 elephants in the room.
There are many other elephants in the room, but I don't think this record should go into the discography of classic records, because I don't think it's the best record. But if it went in, I don't think I'd be too bothered anyway, because it's still a fucking good record.
This is going to lead to like some kind of like deep, insightful debate on whether or not we're voting for subjective best or subjective most important.
This is the most important Confessions record. I don't think anybody can contest that. Because like I said before we started recording, Ben Collar is a game changer for Converge. Like, their drumming is just...
Yeah, but Nate came in here as well. The same album.
Did he?
Yeah, both. This album's the first appearance of Nate and Ben. Yeah.
Everything on this record works. There's not a bad song on it. There's not a bad sound on it, I don't think. The mix, the production.
Oh, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, all of it's great. But let's talk about why that is the case.
Well, this is their fourth album.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty substantial lineup change with just Kurt and Jacob, who from the current lineup and the original lineup, there was also a guitarist in this one called Aaron Dalbeck, who I have to admit, I didn't actually know that.
There's two guitars on this record.
Yeah, I consider myself a big Converge fan. This is a five-piece album. I did not know that properly started looking into this. But yeah, this is got layered guitar in it in a way that the other ones, well, they presumably have layered guitar, but it's probably all done by Kurt now. So, this was Aaron's last record. I believe he left shortly after. He's also, by the way, in the band Bane.
Ah, okay.
And I think Bane at the time was something of a side project, but he left to sort of do more with that. As to how mutual that was, I was not able to establish.
And Bane no longer exists. At the last show last year. Last year, yeah.
I never saw Bane nor spent much time with them. But I might give it a
shot. Hardcore band. Like.
Yeah, that's the impression I got, yeah.
Yeah, I think you can tell the change in Converge here was before this, they were a hardcore band.
No, metalcore band.
Yeah, they definitely had metal influences. They were a hardcore band, hardcore kids into them. This album is just a massive exploration of sonics. It's, you know, it's progressive. It's, you know, it's doom. It's sludge. It's everything else. And that's why it's definitely, I think we've all agreed already, that it's the most important Converge album.
Yeah, but you should probably...
It's a massive step forward for them.
It's probably worth mentioning as well that unlike many of the records that we'll talk about in the course of this, like, this is actually, this album has a lot of accolades as it is, you know, so we're talking about albums that maybe were never hailed as genuine classics, and I suppose we're talking in the bigger sense, you know, in the global sense, yeah, this is never up there with, you know, some of the best, like, Chris Rea.
actually, Chris Rea was the first album that we ever had in the house on CD. When we first got a CD player in like 1990 or something in the house, Chris Rea Auberge was the first album.
Auberge.
So
I'm not drunk enough for this conversation.
I'll always have a slight soft spot in my heart for Chris Rea. But,
so,
you know,
given that it's not quite up to Chris Rea standards, it still does bloody well. Well done, lads.
Quite
good
often
try.
Gets voted, you know, top three.
Terrorizer album of the year 2001.
Yeah.
Rock Sound, I think, said it was like the game changer for heavy music. And
it was.
Like Decibel magazine put it as the best album of the best metal album of the 2000s. Something like that. So it's an acclaimed record.
It's up there with Mastodon, Leviathan.
It's way better than that.
No, but in terms of lists that come out from
I know. And I mean that, I'm just showing my bias.
And then what else? Like Oceanic by Isis. Like it's just one of those, it is a standard classic in terms of, you know, alternative
modern
music.
Alternative heavy metal or modern alternative hardcore, whatever kind of strange tag you want to give it.
I'd argue they're still a metalcore band on this record. There's so many Swedish death metal guitars in this album, it's not even funny.
Maybe that's the influence of Aaron.
Definitely metal and they're hardcore, but I think they're more than that as well.
Yeah, definitely. There is more on this record than just metal.
They've had some funny arcs, though. I mean, I think maybe that's partly down to that boy Aaron being in the band still at this point. But then you've got that thing, you know, where like Dark Horse and, you know, brings in the kind of tapping sort of really cheesy, almost Maiden-esque sort of stuff. So they're like little dalliance with the cliches. It's almost, you know, like a nod and a wink, and there's a fair amount of irony in the way they kind of sprinkle those about and then almost deliberately subvert them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like here's a trope and here's a trope used in a way that you've maybe never heard it before. Yeah. And this album kind of does a hell of a lot of that.
Yeah, there's definitely, we'll get into it in a minute, but there's definitely at the gates riffs on this record which are like warped into like something completely different. Like it's remarkable.
I think like without breaking it down track by track quite yet, I think this is the first album I noticed where Converge started to have crossover appeal with the Jesus Lizard fans and the Noise Rock fans. And Converge now are sort of distinct amongst the kind of metal and hardcore genre for the fact that they have so much crossover appeal into, you know, for want of a better phrase, some of the kind of more hipster kind of scenes, you know, like some of the that kind of ironic, mathy hardcore that wasn't really coming from a place of genuine hardcore. It was coming from almost working backwards from the art school. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, certainly in Glasgow, you had that coming from, and this is in no way a criticism of it, but, you know, bands like Ultimate Thrush, who were not coming up through the punk and hardcore scene, they were actually working backwards to that from being in an art rock scene. And you had bands like Take a Worm for a Walk Week, or a bit of both. And, you know, I'm sure every town, every city had a similar equivalent. And Converge were one of the bands that I think kind of enabled that. They formed a bit of a bridge between Noise Rock and Jesus Lizard and Unsane and Cherubs and all these kind of really scuzzy bands. And then they joined them up with this really furious hardcore scene that was starting to kind of push its boundaries. And as a result, they have a hell of a lot of crossover appeal. I mean, they really are one of those weird bands where you can talk to people who seem like they listen to The National and they've got a soft spot for Converge.
The GNDO album cover tattooed on them or something usually. Like, but this record is also really interesting because for me, it lands like squarely in the space of records which probably shouldn't even really exist because of all the different like influences that are at play on it. It could have been a total mess.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
it's just not.
Right. It definitely seems like a gamble. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Like, going through the tracks, like track by track as well, you really start to see they took different chances on each song as well. It's like the
millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Yeah, so this is pretty fearless, and I think it's no coincidence as a result of it being so fearless and taking so many risks that it was rewarded with such kind of kudos from people generally, like you said.
What's interesting though for me on that take is that quite often to like take a group of musicians like that and then like meld an album that's so diverse often takes like an outside influence, a producer of real, you know, I don't know, stature, yeah, or with weird ideas. But with this, it came from within, which I don't know, I find really interesting. It means that they must work in a really sort of democratic way. They're very happy with, you know,
I think like
with Kurt taking the lead on production duties.
Yeah, I think like I'm kind of have a slight advantage here. We actually, like in a previous group I played in, we recorded with Kurt. I know him reasonably well and got a chance to kind of spend some time with him and get to understand a wee bit about where the music from Converge came from. And it is really interesting because the guys in the band have really, I mean, it shouldn't be maybe a surprise because loads of people have diverse tastes, but, you know, Kurt's like a big Fugazi fan and he clearly has a much more open mind than perhaps their earlier work demonstrates, you know. And I think those influences, those much more diverse influences, started to manifest on this.
And I think it's also a testament to how much this record changed all of their lives as well. Like, they've all managed to forge careers either in music or, you know, around music, just by dint of releasing this record and touring the fuck out of it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, Kurt being so involved in the production of this record was bound to reap rewards for him, because this album's production is unbelievable. Mm. I mean, that's the consistent theme, reading about it, doing a little research on it. People just lauding it for its, like, the bravery and the tones and the style of the recording and the ambition of some of the techniques. You know, it's a pretty sonically incredible record. So he was bound to benefit from it. And I think, obviously, Jacob doing the artwork and being so invested in the lyricism of it, you know. I personally actually have some hang-ups with Converge's lyricism sometimes. I find it a little bit OTT. I love his artwork. Stuff's amazing. And he has consistently remained the inverted commas, face of that band, and more than just his own face and tattoos, but in his style of art. And that's actually really nice. There's a level of consistency to the band as well that makes people, you know, you don't have different graphic designers being hired by a label to come up with something. It's this is the guy, he does it, and it always has this, even if they're quite different, you know.
I think that the artwork on this album is really important.
It's iconic, the album artwork.
It's iconic. It's an iconic artwork, and even like the feel of the album and the inner sleeve and stuff like that, mm-hmm. It all works. But then, you know, you've got that character of Jane Doe, which I think has sort of come to define the band. You know, it's their logo, mm-hmm. pretty much. You know, and as important as Jane Doe and that, you know, mysterious character throughout the album is important lyrically, I think, yeah, it's that defining image of, you know, Jane Doe is, I don't know, I always go back and I think aesthetically, album, like the aesthetics of an album are important.
One of the really refreshing things about Jane Doe is it's not gratuitously grotesque, and it's not overwhelmingly black, and it's not overstated. It's there's air in the music, there's gaps in space in the music, and there's gaps in space in the artwork, and it's not trying too hard. There's something really nicely subtle yet very, very identifiably distinct about it. And I really personally as well, I've always warmed to those metal bands that didn't overplay it, that didn't just drench everything in black, that didn't just, you know, they embraced, you know, the spaces and the stuff. I think of bands like Botch and stuff like that were very intense and could just have had these morbid, black, bloodied album covers, but chose not to, and chose to kind of subvert the aesthetic of it as well. The stars kind of aligned in this album. There's a lot of different things that it was doing other than just musically. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of different things about its approach, about the look of the band, about the style of the band, the fact it came from a genuine hardcore background, the fact that they played gigs and social clubs, you know, the kind of shows that you used to see videos of Fugazi doing, you know, like kids hurtling over the bands you saw Converge doing, you know. I think there's a lot of different aspects to this band that gave them a legitimacy, and then it was the perfect time to strike with a really strong album.
Jane Doe's, I think Fugazi is a good reference point, because I think Jane Doe is our generation's Fugazi moment, mm-hmm. for hardcore music, you know.
Yeah, for hardcore stuff, yeah, definitely.
Is that important?
I mean, when we recorded with Kurt, I would say at least half the days he was sitting with a vintage Fugazi shirt on, which one I can only assume was bootlegged because of Fugazi's disdain for merchandise. But, you know, that aesthetic, Discord, the Washington scene, that stuff, that definitely runs through the Converge record. Like I say, there's such a different feel to some of the tracks that it's kind of interesting to see the directions that they pushed in, and how, when you stood back from it, it had this beautifully diverse palette. But when you get closer into the songs, you see the individual songs kind of going in specific directions and you know, achieving things. I think, like, I mean, there's no point going sequential. I think that's a little bit trite, but I think the one that really stood out for me is Home Wrecker. I've always loved Home Wrecker. I think Home Wrecker is probably still my all-time favourite heavy track.
Probably Thaw for me on that record is my favourite, because it just sounds like it just comes out of nowhere after Phoenix and Flames before, yeah. it, and it just I mean, those two tracks, Phoenix and Flight, Phoenix and Flames, are like pure noise anyway, but this is just like something else. And that riff at the end.
Can you imagine, can you imagine if you are, you know, a kid listening to like Madball and Sick of It All and, you know, Hatebreed or whatever, and then suddenly you're hearing Thaw, like on a band that is on like similar festivals, you know, it's kind of touring on the same circuit. Like, what the fuck is this music? Mm. Like, where is the beatdown? Where is, you know, this is like really innovative writing.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure there were other bands doing it at the time, but this is a band that really brought it together in a really beautiful form. And I just, listening to Thaw and trying to kind of like imagine that in the context of the hardcore scene at the time, it's so different. Like, it's so unexpected as a piece of music.
Talk about Concubine as well, because the lyrics that are written down are not the lyrics that are in the song.
Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. All he says in the actual song is "Used to gold, asty gold," but he's written all these lyrics which are in the booklet and all that, and he doesn't sing any of them. Even the way that opens the record is just like getting smashed in the face with a bottle.
Well, just the first two tracks, Concubine and Fault and Fracture, I can't think of another album that is as forceful in an opening that's just like, hey, like, I think what they're doing is they're like, because like Jane Doe, the track at the end is what, it's maybe my favourite track in the album just because I fucking love post-metal and sludge, and like it's just so epic and builds. So, you know, they're going to do that. They're going to do something that the hardcore kids haven't heard, but they're going to come in with just, fuck you, we can fucking destroy, you know, more than anybody else in the scene, and then we're going to do shit that you've not heard before.
It's such an off-kilter introduction as well. It's such an unsettling, you know, there's no counting, there's no, it's just this, fuck it, where the fuck, where do I start, where do I latch on, like, where is the four?
And it's, you know? It's so ridiculously heavy, but then it's also, it's mathy as well, and it's like, it's off-putting, and it's like
kind of like getting, it's got that kind of, like, because of the way it escalates as well, whereas then it's like getting chased down a corridor by some kind of creature with different length limbs. Like, the limbs are all different lengths, so it can't run at any kind of set pace, but it's still catching you. See, it's always so irregular. It's brilliant writing.
I always find that when I listen to this record, it feels like it's like the inside of like one guy's mind just melting. You know, like that's the process you've been taking on, or I guess in this case it's probably one woman's mind melting, given the title of the title of the album. But everything about it is just, like, even what you're saying, Weaver, but like the way it starts, it's like, by the way, it's like them saying, by the way, we can be the heaviest band in the world.
Yeah.
And we're going to take you on this journey where you'll probably think we are the heaviest band in the world. And then,
I mean, it's like starting a really long, really angry conversation just by grabbing someone by the neck and shaking them. You know, it is literally, right, we're going to talk. You know, I think you mentioned Jane Doe as well. I think Jane Doe as a title track is a really pretty astonishing bit of music as well in the context of the album, apart from the fact that it balances it. And I know in some of the later albums they did similar things where they kind of went into the more post-rock kind of epic, doomy, kind of old man gloom type vibes, maybe not as heavy as that, but you know. But one of the things I thought was really interesting about Jane Doe is that I mentioned them earlier on, it's really reminiscent of We Are the Romans, like the track by Botch from We Are the Romans, that kind of like Gregorian chant, kind of like huge, spacious, ominous, kind of quasi-futuristic but medieval. It's just got a lot of different creepy elements to it, and I think it's like a, it's maybe actually something that gets overlooked because there's flashier moments in the record, but it's a really great bit of music, and it's also very Boston at that time when you consider bands like Isis and stuff, you know.
See the bass in Hell to Pay.
I was talking to somebody about this the other day because I was just having a conversation about the greatest bass tones of all time.
That's top there, man.
Yeah,
that's,
I was like, there. Hell to Pay by Converge, Blindness by The Fall, and maybe Monkey Trick by Jesus Lizard. Like, they're just absolutely stunning bass tones. They're just like,
I think the bass gets forgotten quite a lot.
Yeah.
But like all,
all five of them?
All five of them. But I mean, all four of current Converge are on the fucking absolute form of their lives.
Yeah.
And
this was
but they're all incredible.
And this was Nate's first album, though. Yeah. So it's like, way to make an arrival, you know? Yeah. It's like, you know, Nate is here and he's now getting into the situation where the bass is the standout instrument in a couple of these tracks, or at least, you know, for moments of these tracks. And that, again, it adds so much balance. It's a very spacious song, that song. So much of that kind of music is very frantic and unrelenting, and, you know, it's exhausting after a while to listen to some of that stuff. But that song and the songs like it and Phoenix and Flames, they add a change of pace and a roominess, like just space between the notes, you know, and just time to bob your head. That is just very refreshing. It's like
We spoke about it at length already, but I think when a lot of people think of this record, and it does come back to what you're saying there, Chris, is like, I think particularly when I listen to this song, the first thing that struck me is like, I think a lot of people actually forget about the different textures that are on this record. Like, when you think about it, they just think about how it's like getting kicked in the nuts over and over and over again. But it's so much more than that. It's getting to kick in the nuts with various different types of felt shoes.
From different angles.
From different angles.
I think, just talking about riffs as well, there's a riff in Heaven in Her Arms that is just a monster, an absolute monster of a riff. And I think one that stands out to me as well is that's a Broken Vow.
Mm-hmm.
And Broken Vow, I think, makes some really nice nods to their trad-y kind of hardcore roots. You know, it's like, I think it's sort of like Minor Threat, but like covered by a black metal band. You know, it's got that classic kind of structure, classic sort of approach, but it's just this caustic, visceral kind of like trebly aggressive snarling quality to it, and it's such a modernised version of an old standard that I think it probably epitomises a lot what the band were trying to achieve overall.
I agree. Yeah, what are you going to say?
No, I agree. It's just it's funny. I'm just thinking, first time I ever heard this album, I fucking hated it.
Same.
Because I was 15, and I'd been listening to Korn. And Idlewild.
Like, you don't listen to Korn now.
And the Chemical Brothers. You know, I had I just started reading Kerrang, and I just started getting into stuff.
We were the same guy.
And then, you know, and then all of a sudden I see, oh, this band Converge. I was never into hardcore, I was always a metal kid. And I read the reviews of Jane Doe, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna have to get this when I go down to HMV. Bought it. And then put it on, and it was just so abrasive, and the vocals for me, just I couldn't get the first time I listened. Maybe the second time I just didn't understand. I was like, it's just absolute noise.
I have to say, I get like two analogous things. One would be Jesus Lizard for me. The first time I heard them, I was like, what the fuck is this?
Really?
I had a limited edition Jesus Lizard vinyl that I don't know how I managed to get lucky enough to buy, and I hated it so much I took it back, and it turns out it's worth quite a bit of money. And I took it back because I was trying to make a point of how much I disapproved.
Yeah.
And the other example would be, and I think it's probably more relevant, is the first time I read American Psycho. And the first time I read American Psycho, I was genuinely appalled by it. Like, this is inexcusable. This shouldn't be allowed. You know, this is like so challenging on so many levels, and I just am really perturbed by this. And it wasn't until revisiting it a year and a half, 2 years later, that I realised what an absolute masterpiece it was. But, you know, the shock factor, the getting jolted out of your comfort zone by this album, I can relate to that. Definitely.
American Psycho, you're not supposed to enjoy it, though. I think you're supposed to enjoy this record, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I enjoy it now.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't like Converge at all. I'm actually a really, really recent Converge fan. Like, it took me a long, long time to actually get to like them. And it's only been in the past couple of years where I've been like, holy fuck, this! Why have I never?
Yeah,
have you seen
before?
Them?
I've never seen live before.
Wow, you're missing out.
There's two albums that kind of at the same time came out, and took me a while to get into. Maybe it was just because there was so much to them. It was this and Relationship with Command, because you know that was my first experience of At the Drive-In, my first experience of Converge, and
both are really zeitgeisty though.
Yeah, like, both very zeitgeisty, but I think they both, once they persevered with him, you know, after a few days, weeks, introduced me to like a whole new aspect of what music was and, you know, depths that you could go into.
Yeah.
But it's just funny. It's, yeah, you were just talking about that and I was just zoning out, just thinking, I fucking hated this album when I first heard it. And now I mean, absolutely fucking adore it.
Yeah, as I say, I think some of the best things in my life, you know, I've hated when I...
Yeah, that's it. Like, you. Man, I used to hate mushrooms. I used to hate olives. Yeah. I used to hate red wine.
So you've never seen them live.
No.
They're a pretty amazing proposition live. Really, really good. I mean, I've seen them in a few places. To be honest, being a resident of Glasgow, we rarely get to see them in a good surrounding. Mm. They seem to keep getting booked up here in...
weird venues.
Really poor choices of venues, and the gigs are... I've seen them struggle against the venues a couple of times and still come out in pretty stellar form, but having also seen them elsewhere, I've seen them in some pretty sparkling form. I remember seeing Converge, and I think anybody that was at the Converge show where they played upstairs at the Barfly, when the Barfly was still open opposite the Clyde.
It must have been chaos.
It was absolute pandemonium. It was genuinely one of the best shows I've ever seen in my entire life. The Exploited were playing downstairs the same night and they'd sold out downstairs, and so they'd still gone ahead with the Converge booking and put it upstairs. So they were just playing in this area that was reserved for seating. Yeah. And there were people standing on the bar and like...
We had the big A0 Jane Doe poster from that gig in our flat for like 2 years.
Oh, I tell you, that would have fetched a penny.
Seriously. Yeah, I know. I think my pal still has it.
Yeah. And that gig was unreal. Like, just unreal. Like, we were lucky enough because, you know, we kind of met him and worked with him at that point and spoke to him, so we got to stand off the side of the stage. It really didn't matter. There was people just climbing the walls in that room. It was astonishing.
To put it into context, the Barfly is literally... the upstairs in the Barfly was literally just a bar with some seats.
Yeah.
It was not a big space or a space even made for bands.
Oh, it was totally makeshift. Yeah. They set up their backline on
60 people in there. At most, oh, but they had, but there was about 150 people there.
Minimum. There was a lot. I mean, there were people standing in and on the DJ booth trying to see it. I mean, that was a spectacular concert. Really, really good. Unfortunately, some of the shows up here since have not been as good, and that's not the fault of the band. But they are amazing live.
I need to see them live. I really,
really, really good. Yeah.
So tell us why this isn't... this no, shouldn't be in. No, because
he's gonna start shitting on it in relation to other albums, isn't he?
Yeah, all we've done is talk about how amazing this is, so why should it not be a classic album?
Mm.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm gonna bite my tongue.
Talking about this record has made me realise how much I love it. And I actually think it...
You're like Donald Trump going to China. I can pretty much talk you into anything.
The thing is, it was always going to be a close call, right? For me, Axe to Fall is better from a songwriting point
of view. There's no song in Axe to Fall better than Homewrecker. Homewrecker is the ultimate I've just been dumped music. Like, see, yeah, just sorry, but you'll get your moment. Homewrecker, I remember me and my flatmate, Matt, when he broke up with his girlfriend. He was pretty sore about it, as you are when that happens to you. And we jumped in his old Ford Fiesta and we drove through, I think it was the Mission in Edinburgh, which was like the pure, you know, goth club at the time. And I remember specifically playing Homewrecker 3 or 4 times so loud that we blew out one of the speakers in the door of his car, and just like absolutely rampaging along the motorway to this tune, because it is so propulsive, just so furious.
Holy, yeah.
And I don't feel they've ever reached it. They have had some other fantastic bits of music, but I absolutely adore the sheer simple-minded nihilistic carnage of that song. And by the way, as well, see, when I saw them playing, talking about playing live, Homewrecker is partly distinguished by these brilliant little drum breaks in it. You know, just...
yeah, totally, yeah.
During the chorus, little drum flurries. The second time I saw them play live, I mean, I can only imagine it's a bit like playing Smells Like Teen Spirit, but like Ben deliberately, when it came to the drum flurry, would, instead of doing these incredibly intricate brrrr, we'd actually go and then the band would kick back in, just absolutely on the button, and it was so sarcastic. It's like obviously self-referential, and he's kind of like a bit, kind of, you know, being a bit cheeky, but it's just so ballsy and funny. But yeah, sorry, I don't feel I give that song props enough before we start shifting onto Axe to Fall, which is great. And by the way, Axe to Fall, you're not even talking about You Fail Me. That's good. When Eagles Become Vultures, which is...
There's a case for me for all albums.
But that's better. Eagles Become Vultures is better than any song in Axe to Fall.
I don't know, man. I mean, Dark Horse is a fucking tune and a half.
Yeah, like, it's great, but it's, you know.
The bass tone, that fucking HM2 tapping is just weird. It's fucking great. There's a lot of good songs in Acts of Fall, but this conversation has made me reconsider my position.
And well, coming in, what about No Heroes as well? The actual track,
No Heroes is good. It's probably their most punk record, I think.
But it's so sludgy as well. Some of it is just like, and I think aesthetically on that, I think the artwork on that works.
Which one?
On No Heroes.
No Heroes.
Because it isn't anything in particular. You know, it's like just,
it's a bit miasmic. Yeah.
But so's the music, you know. And yeah, you've got
it's maintained that same aesthetic that Bannon had with the style.
Yeah. But funnily enough, before coming in here, to me, You Fail Me is my favourite record.
Yeah, because You Fail Me, by the way, has got a couple of things about it that I think are kind of off-putting. Over here, fucking digipack, shiny digipacks, man. It's just like shiny digipacks are just the fucking Roadrunner patter, you know, like Sepultura reissues and stuff. You know, I hated that shiny digipack shit. But You Fail Me was also mastered a fair bit quieter than the other albums. So it's like, sweet, if you put on a Converge compilation or shuffle, the You Fail Me tracks tend to kick in just a little bit quieter than certainly like No Heroes and stuff, which are really full on. But that is an amazing record. The way it starts as well is so beautiful. You know, it's such a...
Yep.
That's another brilliant bit of like, let's start in a way that's not what people expect, but this time we're going the other direction. And yeah, I mean, I'm being facetious. I know Axe to Fall is amazing. Amazing. They've got so many good albums, especially in their later career.
All of them could be contenders, but
none of them are as important as Jane
Doe. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Jane Doe is the most important because it didn't just change their fortunes, like as a band, as human beings, but it also changed not just the scene either, but like music, basically. One of the things I wrote down is like so many, like when I was listening to it, and I underlined it in this notebook, is so many bands do all of this now.
Mm.
Everything on that record, everything on Jane Doe, but all the bands that do hardcore of any kind do it now. Something on it. And they just do, you know, and it's just, that's
the back of it.
It
allowed a very sort of stymied genre to become progressive.
Absolutely. Yeah, it definitely kicked out a lot of windows.
They're like, you know, you don't have to sound like Sick of It All. You can sound like anything the fuck you want.
Yeah.
I think that I don't want to fall into the trap though of us putting all of this at the door of Converge, because there were bands before Converge that were up to some pretty incredible stuff.
No question.
You know, there's like there were bands, even bands like on much smaller levels of the scene. The European scene had bands like Song of Zarathustra, and there were bands like Drowning Man, and there were bands like I said, Botch. Botch did a lot of that stuff with We Are the Romans, especially. Like that's I would personally love to cover that in a later show. I think that is an album that about 2-3 years before Jane Doe, I think that came out, and that did a lot of the groundwork for Jane Doe, you know. And I think a lot of the stuff that we are praising them for, they were to some extent standing on the shoulders of giants in so much as they hadn't completely spawned this breaking of the rules, but they were taking this breaking of the rules to its most, you know, to its most established point.
Yeah.
They took it and they said, let's really weaponize this and make it something that we can use. Whereas the other bands had kind of been.
I mean, every band sort of tries to refine and define their influences. Just what they did was they did it really, really, really fucking well.
So those panels decided then.
It seems pretty unanimous.
Yep.
This record is a fucking classic.
It's
stone
fucking
cold
is.
Classic. Does it have to be in the discography?
It might not be your favourite Converge record. Anybody that's listening, you might have another favourite one, but
it's so almost
there's
important.
Any doubt that this is the classic Converge
record. This is the Converge record.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even changed. You guys have even changed my mind.
I think this is in the bag. What are we doing next week?
Next week, I guess we're doing Foo Fighters by the Foo Fighters.
Jesus.
A different album.
It's a very different album. And
sharpening my teeth already.
It'll be an interesting choice, Chris.
Yeah, this is my choice. That's right. I don't know, I'm feigning surprise. It's just maybe that I slightly regret it. But then again, I don't. We'll get to that.
But go on the Facebook page, vote for this record. Tell us if we're right. Tell us if we're wrong.
Well, vote for it if you want to vote for it. We're not trying to steer your vote.
We are. You know, we definitely are.
The internet is not about trying to steer people's votes, and social media especially is not about trying to decide who you vote for.
If you don't think this album is classic, then you are clearly wrong.
Yeah, if you don't, I mean, you might as well unsubscribe from the page.
Yeah, just just unlike it or whatever. I don't know. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.